All right, in Genesis 40 tonight. So, as the Lord wills, we'll get through 40 and 41 as we contemplate these dreams. Last time, we were in Genesis 39, and we left off with Joseph, who had fled from Potiphar's wife because he chose not to sin against his God, chapter 39, verse 9. And then he was accused by Potiphar's wife after she was humiliated as Joseph refused to lie with her. And then Potiphar's anger burned, chapter 39, verse 19, and put him into jail. Verse 21, the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him, gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. And then the jailer committed to Joseph's charge, verse 22, all the prisoners who were in the jail, whatever was done there, he was responsible for it. So as he was the steward of Potiphar's household, he now becomes a steward, as it were, in the jail. And so that's where we pick up this evening in Genesis chapter 40, verse 1. Then it came about after these things, the cupbearer and the baker for the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was furious with his two officials, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. So he put them in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard in the jail, the same place where Joseph was imprisoned. And the captain of the bodyguard put Joseph in charge of them, and he took care of them, and they were in confinement for some time. Then the cupbearer and the baker for the king of Egypt, who were confined in jail, both had a dream the same night, each man with his own dream, and each dream with its own interpretation. When Joseph came to them in the morning and observed them, behold, they were dejected. And he asked Pharaoh's officials who were with him in confinement in his master's house, "Why are your faces so sad today?" Then they said to him, "We have had a dream, and there is no one to interpret it." Then Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell it to me, please." So the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph and said to him, "In my dream, behold, there was a vine in front of me, and on the vine were three branches, and as it was budding, its blossoms came out, and its clusters produced ripe grapes. Now Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, so I took the grapes and squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I put the cup into Pharaoh's hand." Then Joseph said to him, "This is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Within 3 more days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office, and you will put Pharaoh's cup into his hand according to your former custom when you were his cupbearer." Verse 14. "Only keep me in mind when it goes well with you, and please do me a kindness by mentioning me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this house. For I was in fact kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing that they should have put me into the dungeon." Verse 16. When the chief baker saw that he had interpreted favorably, he said to Joseph, "I also saw in my dream, and behold, there were 3 baskets of white bread on my head. And in the top basket there were some of all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh. And the birds were eating them out of the basket on my head." Then Joseph answered and said, "This is its interpretation. The 3 baskets are 3 days. Within 3 more days, Pharaoh would lift up your head from you and will hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat your flesh off you." Thus it came about on the 3rd day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for all his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. And he restored the chief cupbearer to his office, and he put the cup into Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker, just as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. All right, so Joseph is in jail. He's been kind of put in charge in the jail. And so now we have this story of the cupbearer and the baker. And these guys end up in jail. Verse 2, Pharaoh was furious with his 2 officials. And we'll see that come back in chapter 41. And so he puts them in confinement, verse 3. And verse 4 is interesting. The captain of the bodyguard put Joseph in charge of them. So the captain of the bodyguard here actually is Potiphar, right? And so Potiphar is the one against whose wife Joseph supposedly committed, you know, some act of adultery. At least it looks like Potiphar was convinced of that, at least for a time. But at the end of chapter 39, you can see the Lord was with Joseph, as has been the case throughout this entire story. And whatever he did, the Lord made to prosper. So in some way, it seems as though Potiphar's anger, which, by the way, verse 19 of chapter 39 says was his anger burned, that this anger that Potiphar had against Joseph had waned in some measure. We saw last time, actually, that it was pure grace that Joseph was actually even put in jail. He wasn't actually killed, right? So he's a slave, right? Sold into slavery. He could have easily been killed by Potiphar. He wasn't. He was merely put in jail. It seems as though that anger now has waned more for Potiphar's anger against Joseph. And so now the cupbearer and the baker, verse 4 of chapter 40, are put in the charge of Joseph, okay? Cupbearer and the baker, verse 5, they both have these dreams the same night. Now, we've seen dreams before in our study of Genesis. We saw it in the life of Jacob, and we also saw it, if you remember, just if you turn back a page or two, to chapter 37. Joseph, if you remember, when he's first introduced to us, in chapter 37, Joseph has two dreams. He has a dream in verse 5 and following, and then he has a dream in verse 9 and following. And these dreams that he has, he actually is not the interpreter of these dreams. In the narrative, in the first dream, his brothers interpret, verse 8, then his brothers said to him, "Are you actually going to reign over us?" As the 11 sheaves bend over, and it was probably 10 at this time, 10 sheaves bend over and bow down to Joseph's sheaf. And then in verse 9, his second dream, verse 10, he relates it to his father and to his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, "What is this dream you have had? Shall I and your mother and your brothers actually come to bow ourselves down before you to the ground?" So dreams have been active in Joseph's life to this point. All right, and so Joseph has some experience with this, but not necessarily interpretation. So this just sort of new revelation in chapter 40. And the cupbearer and the baker in Egypt have dreams on the same night. Verse 6, Joseph wakes up the next morning. He sees the cupbearer and the baker. He takes notice. They're dejected. Okay? And so this is important, I think, right? Joseph, not only, as we saw in the past, is he trustworthy and honest, right? So no one names as a steward someone who's not trustworthy and honest, but apparently he's also has some sense of caring about the people that are put under his charge. He observes them, verse 6, they were dejected. He asks them, basically, "What's wrong with you?" Verse 7, they say, "We've had dreams, we don't know what they mean." He says, verse 8, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell it to me, please." So then we have the cupbearer tells his dream. And I'm not going to go back through it here, right? But basically, Joseph sees, as he interprets this dream, that this is a dream portending good news for the cupbearer. Within 3 more days, verse 13, Pharaoh will lift up your head and will restore you to your office, and you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand according to your former custom when you were his cupbearer. So he gives him this good interpretation of this first dream for the cupbearer. Verses 14 and 15 is a bit of a plea here for favor from the cupbearer in light of the fact that he's given him this interpretation, what happens to be good news, right? Verse 14, "Only keep me in mind when it goes well with you, and please do me a kindness by mentioning me to Pharaoh and get me out of this house." Okay? So he's asking for a bit of help.
Sorry, I'm being too correct.
It's okay. Verse 16, the chief baker sees that Joseph has given the cupbearer a good news story, a good interpretation, and so he tells him his dream, and it doesn't go so well for the baker, right? This is clearly a bad news story. Verse 19, Within 3 more days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you and will hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat your flesh off of you. Verse 20, on the third day, it's Pharaoh's birthday, very common. We will see it again and again in the scriptures. At the time of a ruler's birthday, there's a great feast, in some cases lasting many days. They make rash vows, they make decisions in terms of that. In this particular case, he decides how he's going to handle the affairs of the cupbearer and the baker, with whom previously he was furious. That's what it said, verse 2. So we have no details as to what's going on in the background, whether or not he did some sort of thorough investigation as to what happened, and you know, whether the cupbearer was vindicated and the beggar or baker was implicated or whatever. We don't know any of that. It could be simply his being capricious as this demigod figure and head of the Egyptian Empire at that time. Anyway, he raises up, verse 20, he lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. He basically, among this feast, he asks them to stand, essentially, is what he's asking them to do here. Verse 21, he restores the chief cupbearer, puts the cup into Pharaoh's hand. Verse 22, he hangs the chief baker, just as Joseph had interpreted to them. All right, so Joseph's ability to interpret the dreams now is confirmed, just as he said it would happen. And the chief cupbearer, says verse 23, did not remember Joseph, but forgot him, at least for a time. For 2 full years, actually. Chapter 41, verse 1. Now it happened at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream. And behold, he was standing by the Nile. And lo, from the Nile there came up 7 cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed in the marsh grass. Then behold, 7 other cows came up after them from the Nile, ugly and gaunt or thin, and they stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. And the ugly and gaunt cows ate up the 7 sleek and fat cows. Then Pharaoh awoke, and he fell asleep and dreamed a second time. And behold, 7 ears of grain came up on a single stalk, plump and good. Then behold, 7 ears, thin and scorched by the east wind, sprouted up after them. And the thin ears swallowed up the 7 plump and full ears. Excuse me. Then Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. Now it came about in the morning that his spirit was troubled. So he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. And Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was no one who could interpret them to Pharaoh. Then the chief cupbearer spoke to Pharaoh, saying, I would make mention today of my own offenses. Pharaoh was furious with his servants, and he put me in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard, both me and the chief baker. And we had a dream on the same night, he and I. Each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now a Hebrew youth was with us there, a servant of the captain of the bodyguard, and we related them to him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each one he interpreted according to his own dream. And it came about that just as he interpreted for us, so it happened. He restored me in my office, but he hanged him. Okay, so let's pick up back in verse 1. So 2 full years now that Joseph is now still in jail, okay? And this happens to us a lot, right? As we read in Genesis, we've talked about it before, right? This idea that these things seem to happen in rapid succession, right? And in our sort of fast food culture, right, we get very frustrated when things take, you know, 2 days or 2 hours, right? Think about that, right? Sitting in the ER, that sort of thing, right? We get squirmish after a couple of hours, right? Here, Joseph is in jail, and he's now there 2 additional years before chapter 41 rolls around. And so Pharaoh now has this dream. And so we see God working these things out, right? Ultimately, God's hand is behind all of this working not just in Joseph's life, but as we will see near the end of the chapter, there will be foreshadowing as we head into Genesis 42 about God working in Jacob and the rest of Jacob's sons' lives as well. All right, so that's what's happening here. God is ordaining all of these things, from the dreams of the cupbearer and the baker, to the dreams of Pharaoh, to Joseph's ability to interpret it, to the famines that are coming, as we will see. Right, so he has these two dreams. He has the cows and the ears of corn. There are seven sleek and fat cows that are eaten up by the seven ugly and gaunt or thin cows. And then there are the seven ears that are plump and good. And then they're overtaken on that same stalk by seven other ears, thin and scorched by the east wind. Right, they swallow up the good ears. And so Pharaoh is troubled. He calls in his priests. It says magicians. These are basically soothsayer type priests, type people. Right, and all of the wise men that he can muster in his kingdom. He tells them the dream. This is actually slightly different from an episode that will come later, right, in the book of Daniel, where actually he says, I'm not going to tell you the dream. I want you to tell me the dream and tell me the interpretation. So those are two different stories. But in this one, Pharaoh actually tells the magicians and the wise men his dream, but none of them can come up with a reasonable interpretation. Verse 9, the cupbearer, now 2 full years later, remembers Joseph. Okay? He says to Pharaoh, I would make mention today of my own offenses, okay, or sins. Now, there's some discussion here about what exactly the cupbearer is referring to. All right? Some commentators think that the offense that he's speaking of is the offense that's described in chapter 40, verse 23. So let's go back to 23. It says, yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. That is clearly one offense. Joseph pleads back in verses 14 and 15 of chapter 40, please remember me when you come before Pharaoh, and he exalts you again, and the cupbearer forgets. It is also possible, as some commentators say, that the offense that he's speaking of is all the way back in chapter 40, verse 1, then it came about after these things, the cupbearer and the baker for the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. Right? And you can imagine this, right? The cupbearer doesn't necessarily want to remind the king of a previous time when he offended him. Right? The king may get angry again. Right? Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Now I'm mad again, sort of thing. Right? Now, my particular take on this, and there's only a couple of context clues here. My particular take on this is that it's actually the latter. I think that it's the original offense of the cupbearer against Pharaoh. I see that in the context clues in verse 10. Pharaoh was furious with his servants, and he put me in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard, both me and the chief baker. So the only context here in the story that the cupbearer mentions is when he had offended the king. Again, not to be dogmatic about it, but some people see either one of those, right? So he remembers the story, verse 11, we had a dream, both the cupbearer and the baker, on the same night. Each of us dreamed according to the interpretation. Now a Hebrew youth, verse 12, was with us there, a servant of the captain of the bodyguard. We related them to him. He interpreted our dreams for us. And it came about, verse 13, that just as he interpreted for us, so it happened. He restored me in my office, but he hanged him. Verse 14. Then Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph, and they hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, but no one can interpret it. And I have heard it said about you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Verse 16, Joseph then answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. And then beginning in verse 17, all the way down to 24, Pharaoh recounts his dream. We're not going to read it again. I'll just note here, verse 16, it's very interesting. When Joseph says to Pharaoh, it is not in me, okay, he says, God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. That word for favorable there is actually shalom. It's actually a peaceful a peaceful answer. Okay, very, very important word, actually, in the Hebrew idiom. Right, this concept of shalom or peace or just general rightness and tranquility. Okay, and so Joseph here is convinced that God will give a favorable interpretation to Pharaoh. So Pharaoh recounts the dream to Joseph down through verse 24. Verse 25 then begins the interpretation. Now Joseph said to Pharaoh, "Pharaoh's dreams are one and the same. God has told to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dreams are one and the same. And the seven lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years. And the seven thin ears scorched by the east wind shall be 7 years of famine. It is as I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. Behold, 7 years of great abundance are coming in all the land of Egypt. And after them, 7 years of famine will come. And all the abundance will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. And the famine will ravage the land. So the abundance will be unknown in the land because of that subsequent famine, for it will be very severe. Now as for the repeating of the dream to Pharaoh twice, it means that the matter is determined by God, and God will quickly bring it about. And now let Pharaoh look for a man discerning and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh take action to appoint overseers in charge of the land, and let him exact a fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt in the 7 years of abundance. Then let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming, and store up the grain for food in the cities under Pharaoh's authority, and let them guard it. And let the food become as a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine, which will occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land may not perish during the famine." Now the proposal seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his servants. Let's pause there. So, the interpretation begins in verse 25, and the interpretation, at least to Joseph, is very clear. There's going to be 7 years of abundance, great abundance, followed by 7 years of famine. All right? And the famine is going to be very severe. How do we know that? Well, I would point you out here. So, verse 27, 7 years of famine. Verse 30, all the abundance will be forgotten. Verse 30, the famine will ravage the land, literally destroy the land. Verse 31, the abundance will be unknown in the land. Verse 31, for it will be very severe, right? So the seven lean, ugly, and gaunt cows coming to eat up the fat cows, and then the lean ears, right? The scorched ears coming to eat up the plump ears, right? Joseph sees in that a very, very bad famine. Okay, it's literally going to destroy the land. And as it turns out, as we'll see at the end of the chapter, this famine is not just the famine in Egypt, but this is, at the time, would be a worldwide famine. It will affect all of the known world at that time. Okay? And so this interpretation comes to Joseph. It comes very clearly. And the fact that Pharaoh has had this same dream twice, Joseph says that in verse 32, as for the repeating of the dream to Pharaoh twice, it means that the matter is determined by God and God will quickly bring it about. So it's as if now day one of the first set of 7 years is about to begin. All right? And so when this warning comes, so comes good, solid counsel. Right? This is who Joseph is, right? He's an honest, trustworthy, caring type guy, right? And so he brings warning, but he also brings counsel. And of course, that begins in verse 33. First and foremost, Pharaoh should look for a man who's discerning and wise and set him over the land of Egypt. It may be at this particular time that Pharaoh is very young. It happened in history many times that these pharaohs were very young boys. And so he's looking for someone who's wise and discerning, right? Someone who's good with numbers and accounting, all right? And so that's what he's looking for. Verse 34, let Pharaoh take action to appoint overseers in charge of the land. And then Pharaoh is to exact a fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt in the 7 years of abundance. So there will be so much grain, there will be so much abundance, that you're now going to tax all of the land over which you rule, And you're going to take this grain and you're going to put it in a storehouse, and that's going to get you through the 7 years of famine. Okay? That's what basically the rest of the counsel is. Verse 36, let the food become as a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine, which will occur in the land of Egypt, so the land may not perish during the famine. Verse 37, so key, now the proposal seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his servants, right? Wise leaders accept wise counsel. Very simple. Mm-hmm. Right? Wise leaders accept wise counsel. Verse 38. Then Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this in whom is a divine spirit? So Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has informed you of all this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and according to your command, all my people shall do homage. Only in the throne I will be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took off his signet ring from his hand, and put it on Joseph's hand, and clothed him in garments of fine linen, and put the gold necklace around his neck. And he had him ride in his second chariot. And they proclaimed before him, bow the knee. And he set him over all the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, though I am Pharaoh, yet without your permission, no one shall raise his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh named Joseph Zaphnath-Paneah, and he gave him Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, as his wife. And Joseph went forth over the land of Egypt. Now Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. And during the 7 years of plenty, the land brought forth abundantly. So he gathered all the food of these 7 years which occurred in the land of Egypt and placed the food in the cities. He placed in every city the food from its own surrounding fields. Thus Joseph stored up grain in great abundance like the sand of the sea until he stopped measuring it, for it was beyond measure. So, at the beginning of the council that Joseph gives to Pharaoh, verse 33, Joseph says, now let Pharaoh look for a man discerning and wise and set him over the land of Egypt. Pharaoh takes that advice and he sees in Joseph this very man. You see in verse 39, Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has informed you of all this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you are. Okay, and so then we see verse 40, this is amazing. You shall be over my house, and according to your command, all my people shall do homage. And only in the throne I will be greater than you. This is the third time now that this has happened to Joseph. That he was put as second in command, second in charge, right? Over everything except in the case of Potiphar, the food he ate. In the case of the jailer, right? Hardly anything. And now in the case of Pharaoh, right? He has this incredible commission, right? Even such that the people of Egypt will pay Joseph homage or honor, right? You can see that, verse 43, he has Joseph ride in his second chariot, right? This is a huge deal, right? The second chariot is the chariot that follows the Pharaoh or the leader into battle and is actually the escape chariot if the battle goes south, right? And so in some sense, Joseph is entrusted with the very life of Pharaoh here, all right? And for those of you who have seen Ben-Hur, right? So you see Ben-Hur coming in into Rome. He's standing on the chariot next to his adoptive father, right? This is a place of great honor. Verse 44, Pharaoh said to Joseph, though I am Pharaoh, yet without your permission, no one shall raise his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh gave this name to Joseph, which I won't say again, but essentially it can mean any number of things. It means perhaps God speaks, right? Or revealer of secrets. So the name probably refers to Pharaoh's acknowledging that Joseph is the interpreter of dreams, looking back, of course, to the fact that Joseph gives all the interpretation back to God, right? So it means either God speaks or revealer of secrets or something like that. And he gives him a wife, the daughter of Potiphera, priest of On, as his wife. And so Joseph now puts, at 30 years old, verse 46, I mean, he's been through a lot now in 30 years, right? And he begins to put his own plan into action, verse 47 and following. He starts to gather up this grain, and he starts to put it in storehouses during the 7 years of abundance to essentially save the land of Egypt, okay? And not just save the land of Egypt, but as we will see, Egypt gets very rich through the course of the 7 years of famine. Egypt gets very rich, not just from people all over the world coming, which we will see. Jacob's sons will also come, right, as we see God working to get Jacob and his sons, Israel, down into Egypt, right? But actually, we will also see that there's a huge taxation burden going on here, so that Pharaoh, during these 7 years of famine, basically amasses control and ownership of every single plot of land in Egypt, right? I'll come back to that. Verse 50. Now before the year of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potiphera, priest of On, bore to him. And Joseph named the firstborn Manasseh, for he said, God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household. And he named the second Ephraim, for he said, God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. When the 7 years of plenty, which had been in the land of Egypt, came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began to come, just as Joseph had said, then there was famine in all the lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. So when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried out to Pharaoh for bread. And Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, go to Joseph. Whatever he says to you, you shall do. When the famine was spread over all the face of the earth, then Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians. And the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. And the people of all the earth came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph, because the famine was severe in all the earth. So, Joseph has two sons to this daughter of this pagan priest, Manasseh and Ephraim. Okay, Manasseh essentially means to forget. Making to forget. And so you can see that as he's named, God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household. Verse 51. So he's obviously more powerful than he could ever have dreamed. Certainly more powerful than he was thinking he was going to be on the day that he was sold by his brothers to the Midianites. And then we see that in verse 52. He named the second Ephraim, for he said, God has made me fruitful. So Ephraim means fruitful. Now, these two sons of Joseph are very important in the ongoing story of the nation of Israel. We'll actually see that both of these sons of Joseph get portions of land in the book of Joshua. Right? So, Jacob had 12 sons. There were 12 apportionments of land in the book of Joshua. Right? But it's not a simple 12 to 12 mapping. Right? Because there was one son of Joseph, a son of Jacob, that did not get a tract of land. Who was it? Levi, that's right. Okay? Levi does not get a portion of the land, for God is his portion. And yet the land was still divided up into 12 portions. And that's because each one of Joseph's sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, got portions of the land. Okay? So very important to remember on a go-forward basis. Sometimes even as you're reading through the prophets, Ephraim will come up. Ephraim is actually a nickname for the northern kingdom of Israel as well. All right? So you may see that in your study Bible notes as well. All right? So Manasseh and Ephraim, very important in the ongoing story, unfolding story of the Israelites through the Old Testament. Of course, as Joseph predicted, there were 7 years of abundance. And then verse 54, the 7 years of famine began to come, just as Joseph had said. This is, as I said earlier, a worldwide famine, in which we can see. Verse 56, the famine was spread over all the face of the earth. Verse 57, and the people of all the earth came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was severe in all the earth. And of course, this will lead us, as I said, into Genesis chapter 42. And so Jacob, or Israel, and his sons are now going to come back into the story. And the dreams that Joseph had back in Genesis 37, which we alluded to earlier in this evening's discussion, will actually come true as that story unfolds. Okay? Finally, I would say this. We've said multiple times, and we will say again, that Joseph is a type of Jesus. Right? And it's interesting here because there's a passage in Philippians, right? So Joseph gets sold to Egypt. He starts to work for Potiphar, the captain of the bodyguard. And we said last time, this was a pretty high-ranking position, right? So imagine Potiphar, he is, as the captain of the bodyguard, literally in charge of making sure Pharaoh stays safe. Joseph is enlisted as his steward, a very high position. Then, because of the incident with Potiphar's wife, he gets demoted. He goes down, as it were, into jail. And although in jail, he also becomes a steward of sorts, second in charge there as well. And then after some time, he gets exalted again to being what is essentially the vice president of Egypt, second in command only to Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Right? So what passage in Philippians are we obviously talking about? In Philippians 2, right, there's this kenotic hymn. Do you remember? So turn with me to Philippians 2. In a section where Paul is exhorting the church in Philippi to be humble. To be humble with the brothers and sisters. And in verse 5, we have what's classically known as the kenotic hymn. Kenotic, K-E-N-O-T-I-C, is derived from the word kenosis, which is the Greek that appears in verse 7, where it says he emptied himself. But in verse 5, let me just read the whole hymn, H-Y-M-N. Verse 5, have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, although he existed in the form of God, did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a bondservant and being made in the likeness of men. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Therefore also God highly exalted him and bestowed on him the name which is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow, of those who are in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and that every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. Do you see? There's this exalted position in heaven. Then there's this coming down, his emptying himself, coming in the form of a bondservant. Do you see that? A slave. And then being exalted again to the right hand of the Father. And at his name, every knee should bow, every tongue should confess, right? Every knee will pay homage to the Son of God, Jesus Christ, the God-man. And so even in this story of Joseph, there is a sense of exaltation, right? And then him going down and being humbled, a slave as it were, and then being exalted, so that all of the peoples of Egypt should even, verse 43, proclaim before him, bow the knee, and that all those would pay homage to him, right? And so there's this Joseph as a type of Christ even in this story as well.